turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now. Save big money at Menards.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Let's go straight out to the HRNP guest line, being joined by Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider. You can follow him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. Matt, the Texans choked away pick number one yesterday. How big of a drop-off is this that the Texans, we've been talking about them having pick number one for the last 2 months, now they have pick number two. What did the Texans lose by winning yesterday?
Hey guys, thanks for having me. You know, honestly, I don't know if they lost a whole lot. I know it does well on radio to be like, oh my God, this team who's got a head coach on the way out wins this game. They lose the number one pick. And I think as people get into this draft class more, they're going to come to understand that having the number two pick this year is fine because the team at number one, Chicago, does not need a quarterback. They're not drafting a quarterback. And so if Houston Texans fans have for 2 months had their mind set on Bryce Young, the quarterback from Alabama, right now, you're still in a great spot to get Bryce Young because the Bears are not drafting a quarterback at one. Sure, there's room. You know, there's 3.5 months for someone to potentially trade up to that number one overall spot. But if that is the case, I do think Houston's going to get a call to find out if they want to come up as well, should a team like the Colts or Panthers try to get to that top spot.
Well, and Matt, but I mean, first of all, I think that trades are going to be very, very a hot commodity with the Bears because this is a different draft than a year ago, as you know. There's quarterbacks that everybody wants. It does start with Young. But I also think that there's something to be said about controlling every round of the draft. By having the first pick in every round of the draft, everybody's coming to you if there's a guy that they would like to add to their roster and they know you have the utmost control of the round that's about to start. As opposed to, they're going to go to the Bears, and then if the Bears don't trade it to someone who wants who they want, then they'll start calling you. I just think it's just another variable or obstacle you've got to get over as opposed to controlling your own destiny round to round in this draft.
To some degree, but you know, I do feel like there's a little bit of a myth of that 33rd selection being traded. It doesn't happen that often where we actually see a team move out. You know, Jacksonville last year, stayed at 33. They took Tyson Campbell, 2 years ago. So, you know, we generally see teams stay in that spot. The Bengals, the year they got T. Higgins, they stayed in that spot as well. So I think the Bears are, you're okay. You know, to have, you know, if it's the Texans are okay to have that second pick. And especially, I think the storyline for me, obviously, new head coach, got to figure out the quarterback position. But to have, you know, 12 draft picks in this class, which is a good class, to have 12 picks in a year, especially where there's so much depth in rounds 3, 4, 5, I think that's the key here of coming off a really strong, you know, 2022 rookie class. Now you've got 12 picks this year. There are quarterbacks. Even if Bryce Young is too short for you, C.J. Stroud looks really good against Georgia. So I do think it's a good year. I mean, to be in the top 3 or 4 is really where you had to be this year, and they got it done.
Joining us on the HRNP guest line, Matt Miller, ESPN NFL draft analyst and insider. Speaking of those quarterbacks, everybody in Houston thinks that they need a franchise quarterback, and how can you blame them after seeing what Davis Mills did this season? Matt, whenever I think there's 4 first-rounders. Curious what you think at the quarterback position. We named half of them. Bryce Young, C.J. Stroud, Will Levis will probably be in the conversation, and then we'll see how high Anthony Richardson ends up climbing with all of his, you know, measurements and how much of a raw prospect he is. How would you break down everybody outside of the Bryce Stroud conversation?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're similar in that they're both very intriguing without a whole lot of proven tape. Will Levis, obviously a little bit more proven than Anthony Richardson, you know, playing the past 2 years in what I would call, you know, kind of a Kyle Shanahan offense. He had 2 different offensive coordinators. That affected his game. He didn't have a great supporting cast. That affected his game. He checks the boxes. He's going to blow people away at the combine and his pro day because his arm strength is fantastic. He's 6'4", 230. He's a very good mover in the pocket. He can run and extend plays. And he'll take off, and he'll run away from defenders at times. So I think Will Levis, the question is, you know, it's almost like, do you overlook some of the inaccuracy? Because to me, it's like, it's not even bad decision-making necessarily. It's more inaccuracy because there will be games where he's 28 or 32 with two touchdowns and two interceptions. And you're like, the ball barely hit the ground, but he threw two interceptions. So there's a little bit of that to his game that you have to try to figure out, okay, is that fixable or is that just who he is? You know, Matthew Stafford won a Super Bowl being a guy kind of like that. So I think that's the kind of the head-scratching part of it. You know, with Anthony Richardson, it's just he's been a starter for 1 year. There's not a lot of tape out there. And, you know, he'll have throws where you don't know where the ball was going. Like, you have no idea where he was trying to go. But then he'll have throws where he looks like Josh Allen, you know, and it's you see the athleticism, not just as a runner, but as a thrower, to be able to, you know, adjust his arm angle, to be able to throw on the move, to the power that he generates, the velocity is really, really impressive. So there's a lot to like, but there's also, you know, gigantic question marks. And I think that's why you hear things like, there's no way he can play in 2023 because he just hasn't played much in college. I mean, I think he threw 11 touchdowns to three interceptions on the road. Against AP teams, he was like six touchdowns, four interceptions. Just it wasn't enough, you know. I mean, his career, I think 23-14 or something like that, touchdown interception. So there's not a lot out there to figure out who he is.
Well, and Matt, I want to know, you know, everybody talks about measurables versus intangibles. We know Bryce Young has all the intangibles, but he's not going to get any taller or play with platform shoes. And he's slight in 180 to 190 pounds, depending on who puts him on the scale. And that's not going to change a whole hell of a lot. Whereas you have a Levis, you have a Stroud, but you have some bigger guys in this draft. But then, like you said, how long are you willing to wait, and how many of these things are fixable, teachable, that guys can correct in terms of accuracy and putting the ball and making the reads they need to make?
Yeah, very few quarterbacks ever have fixed, quote-unquote, fixed their accuracy. And I think even with Josh Allen, he's become the poster boy for traits. I think a lot of people forget that at Wyoming, it was his mechanics that were affecting his accuracy. It wasn't poor decision or poor timing. It was poor mechanics that he was able to fix with a lot of hard work and good coaching. So I look at Bryce Young, and you're right. He's not 6 foot tall. He'll probably weigh 200 pounds by the combine. They'll probably bulk him up a little bit. But, you know, I've seen him play in person, and I'm sure a lot of people there, you know, watched the Alabama-Texas game. I was at that game, and I watched him shrug off a corner blitz and throw a bullet to a tight end, I believe it was, or running back, that essentially won them the game. And so you're right, the intangibles, the poise, the pocket presence. Bryce Young in the pocket, he's not as big as Joe Burrow, but he plays like Joe Burrow in the pocket, where he's just so cool and calm. Everything feels like he's already seen it, you know, and I love that about him. That's why he's my top quarterback in the draft, despite the fact that, yeah, from a measurables perspective, he doesn't check a lot of your boxes, but it's everything else he does that makes him really special.
Being joined on the HR&P guest line, NFL draft analyst and insider for ESPN, Matt Miller. Follow him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. Matt, I know predicting what's going to be there around 12 is pretty impossible right now, a day after the regular season. I guess my question for you would be, how deep is this draft? Like, what tier, what caliber of player could be there for the Texans at pick number 12?
Yeah, I think at 12, I mean, this is a good draft in that area. You know, I was speaking to a general manager last week, and he said this is a really good middle-tier draft where you might not have, you know, there's going to be disagreements about if Will Anderson and Jalen Carter are these elite prospects at the top. We've talked about the quarterbacks. But it's a really good draft, I think, to find starters and find guys. You know, at 12 overall, we can do it at the first receiver in the draft. You got like Clinton Johnson, who's going to play tonight for TCU. Jordan Addison at USC, Jackson Smith and Jigba, it's definitely a very deep draft when it comes to, you know, wide receivers, defensive backs. I mean, there are so many good safeties and corners. It's a great tight end draft as well. So I feel like, you know, with, you know, five picks in the top 75, the Texans are in really good shape to get, you would think, five, if not starters, and really high level contributors.
Matt, I'm curious, before we let you go, because this is something you do on a consistent basis, we've gone back and forth about what kind of a draft Nick Caserio had a year ago. And we could start at the top with Stingley versus Sauce and or Kenyon Green that early for a guard. But he hit in the fourth round with a Pierce at running back. He hit with Petrie at safety. It looks like he got it right with Christian Harris. What did you think of the draft now that you've seen it a year in the NFL?
Yeah, I thought he had a really good draft, honestly. And you're right, there will be conversations for years about Stingley over Sauce. And we'll have to watch that play out. But I personally liked Stingley at that spot. I liked Kenyon Green and thought he had the potential to be a Pro Bowl guard. But you hit it. To get Petrie, Harris, and Pierce, those are three starters and three good starters. And we'll see what happens with John Metchie. You know, hoping the best for his recovery and ability to get out on the field because he was like a starting NFL receiver when he was at Alabama. So, you know, if in two years we're looking back at this draft saying, man, they got six starters in that 22 draft. That's pretty dang good, even for a team that's picking near the top in each round.
Matt, thanks so much for coming on with the Killer Bees, hanging out with us for a few minutes. Great stuff, as always, very insightful. And get ready for the next few months of really having to work very hard.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's why I'm here, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Matt Miller, ESPN NFL Draft Analyst and Insider. You can follow him on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout. Lovie Smith is gone. He is out of here. Second year in a row, the Texans have fired a one-and-done head coach. Texans also choked away pick number one yesterday. How we feeling, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Matt Miller, who just joined us at NFL Draft Scout. You go quarterback at number 2 and Quentin Johnston at number 12. Ben Johnson's your head coach. I like that a lot.
I like it, too.
I like that a lot. Plenty of time to talk NFL draft between now and April 27th. But the Houston Texans are looking for a new head coach. They fired Lovie Smith the night that they choked away pick number one. One of the most important games in Houston Texans franchise history, and the Houston Texans get a negative result. Usually their biggest games in franchise history usually ends up with negative results. Did you like the firing, Blankers? Did you like the firing of Lovie Smith? I don't think we've actually gotten our thoughts.
I was I don't think I was surprised, but the you know in the manner in which it all went down, especially coming off the win, I didn't know when they were going to do it or if they were going to do it. But the fact that they did it, and I woke up to find out about it, and I'm like, well, okay, that was quick and very, again, not Texan-like, that they were the first one out of the gate to make sure they did what they needed to do so they can move forward. I was a little surprised, but at the same time, I totally agree with it because as we've been saying all along, and I'm a firm believer, that you can draft the best franchise quarterback in the world coming out of college, and if you don't put the right support staff and coaching staff around him, he could fail. And you can't afford to have your franchise quarterback, whoever you choose it to be, fail.
I think that you needed a fresh slate. And look, if you want to say, well, then you should have got rid of Caserio because of that fresh slate as well, I can entertain that. I wouldn't have personally done it, but I would not have been upset. I looked at Caserio kind of like I viewed James Click after they won the World Series. I personally would have brought him back, but if they move on, I won't be upset. I thought Caserio was Click 2.0 minus the winning. He was the antithesis of Click in terms of that, whereas Click won a World Series, and Nick Caserio should have had the worst record in the NFL. I like the firing. Like, you had to move on. Lovie Smith should have never been hired, first off. No one else was hiring him around the league. Had a poor year last year as the defensive coordinator. And one thing that we really haven't talked about, like, the Texans had a new head coach this year, Lovie Smith, from David Culley. The staff was pretty much the same.
Right.
Everybody that, like, got promoted was within the staff. They moved on from David Culley. They promoted from within. They moved on from Tim Kelly. They promoted from within. This was the same staff. Like, this wasn't a completely different staff, and they're making wholesale changes from year one to year two. It was really the same exact staff.
Changed offensive line coaches.
Yeah, but, I mean, you get it. So three guys right there. There's probably a couple more.
Yeah, there might be a couple sprinkled, and I'm trying to think.
But it wasn't a wholesale new staff. This was very similar to the staff that they had in year one. They would have brought David Culley back if he was halfway competent, but he was not. This was needed for a lot of different reasons. Like, you can talk about the fan base stuff. I don't really care about the fan base. I care about the fan base. I don't think the Texans' decision should be geared towards firing up the fan base. The only thing that fires up a fan base is winning. They might hate something today and like it tomorrow if you win. Remember, they were booing J.J. Watt. Didn't like J.J. Watt that day. All of a sudden, greatest player in Houston Texans franchise history, helping you win football games. They're all on board. I've been pitching Will Levis. People hate whenever I bring up Will Levis. They don't like the name Will Levis because they want Bryce Young. They want C.J. Stroud. They don't like Levis. So they'll boo Will Levis if he gets picked number two. But if he leads the Texans to the playoffs in his second year, they're going to be cheering for Will Levis and buying his jerseys and drinking mayo and eating full bananas.
Here's the thing, too, Jeremy. Unlike the caller's theory that this was their way of saying we don't like the pressure of taking the guy that we don't really think is worthy of being taken at number one overall, Bryce Young, so this gets in the way of us having to do that. This is the answer we needed. No, the answer you needed is, if you really want to get behind and you have to get behind the fact that Lovie wasn't your guy and you got rid of him, now go get the guy and let him be the guy that chooses the guy that he wants to make this thing go forward faster. And then it's on his shoulders, just like it's on Casario's shoulders. They got the guy they wanted and said they needed to make this rebuild go in the right direction and give you the franchise quarterback that everybody so sorely desires. It's all sitting right there. This is why you can definitively say, I moved on from Lovie Smith because I got the guy with an offensive mind and a play caller that goes with him as an offensive coordinator, and got them in a room and said, who are you looking for and who do you like the best? Got the guy that they wanted, that they said they needed, and now we're ready to go forward.
713-780-ESPN, our HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Thomas is on hold. Thomas, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's on your mind, Thomas?
What's going on, guys? I just wanted to agree with y'all. So, I mean, look, I like Bryce Young, but, you know, it's up to the organization, Casario, and the new head coach to determine who's going to be who they like. And then the second pick, yeah, I've seen rumors of that the TCU receiver you mentioned, maybe the USC receiver, or O-line, you know, just keep solidifying the O-line, wouldn't hurt. But then I just want to ask a question, because I know our fan base is kind of crazy and been just, you know, in this crap hole for all these years, but does Casario's clock technically start this year? He's gotten away from Jack Easterby. He's gotten rid of players from the O'Brien era. He has now has 2 years to clear that and start building the youth foundation. He's going to draft his quarterback. He's technically, officially, per rumors, bringing on his guy as head coach. Now, is this technically Casario's first year, or is he under fire once we go 0-4 to start the year? I'll hang up and listen.
Appreciate the call,
Thomas. I think it's his most important year. I mean, this is his true evaluation year.
Yeah.
Because as we always say, and you know, I'm the whiteboard guy, but to this point we can give the positives and the negatives. We can say the reasons why you would or wouldn't get rid of him. You can say the things that have held him back and the things that were kind of unorthodox he had to deal with in trying to do what other general managers that take over situations probably wouldn't have to do as much of. But as we've talked about, this is the year where it's all on him now. From the press release last night that says he's going to truly be involved with Cal in picking the head coach, and then getting the head coach and being able to control a draft room in which, whether the coach and the OC you would hope has a say-so, but regardless, it's going to be truly his draft to run and dictate making this team the best it can be for next season. And then capitalizing on some of the good picks that he made, and you even heard Matt Miller talk about a year ago. But he's got to now truly start doing it all for real, because it counts, because he's on the clock. And as I keep reiterating, if he doesn't do it to a high enough level, it is fair to put him on the hot seat and evaluate him at the end of next season and say it could be time to move on.
I agree with Thomas that everything has been crapola when it comes to the Houston Texans.
But also, Thomas said, for years and years we've had to deal with this. Really haven't had to deal with it more than 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. I think sometimes it feels longer in the moment.
It sure does.
But it has been crapola recently. I wouldn't say this is Caserio's first year. Like, there's no way you can say that. Like, you have to evaluate everybody in their position from the moment they were hired until the moment that you're currently evaluating them, right? I think it's fair to look at Caserio from the moment he took the job, and Lamont doesn't like whenever we say that he inherited what he inherited. But there were some challenges to the job whenever he accepted it. He signed up for the challenges, but there were challenges in place. Bad salary cap situation, not a very talented roster. Your best player was demanding a trade, and then he had the sexual pervert stuff that came up on top of it, which didn't make life easy, and you had to wait basically a whole year without him and then without recouping assets for him. You had to wait that season. The coaching hires, blah, 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 those didn't work well. So you should evaluate Caserio for everything that he's done. We were evaluating Caserio for trading away six rounders for dudes that he would cut a week later, and people thought we were crazy. Oh, you guys are worried about the little stuff. Now everybody likes to mention that, by the way. But I would say, Thomas, that this is, and look, Nick Caserio, whenever you listen to some like sports talk radio in this city, when you look at the Twitter, a lot of people in this city put Nick Caserio on their hot seat this year. Nick Caserio, when it comes to the fan base, is on the hot seat to some people. I don't think he was on Cal McNair's hot seat. I don't believe the report that Jay Glazer was thinking about firing Nick Caserio. I don't believe that. Now, I think if you go into this offseason, he whiffs on a head coach again, and you can tell that in the 17 games in 2023. His draft class doesn't look very good. I thought his draft class this past year was fine outside of the first round. Jalen Petrie looks like he's going to be a player. Harris, Pierce, they all look like they're going to be players. I'm excited to see Stingley outside of a cover two, and I'm excited to see Kenyon Green in year two as well. I thought Caserio did pretty well for his draft. But if you don't see improvement on next year's team, I think Nick Caserio could be fired. Absolutely. So I wouldn't say this is his first real year in this rebuild. He doesn't like to say rebuild for whatever reason. But it is the first year, in my opinion, and I think in Cal's opinion, that Nick Caserio will be on the hot seat.
No, yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's accurate. I think that when you look at it overall, there's so many variables that I don't know we're ever going to find out the truth to. But at a certain point, winning does start to matter again. And you can say, look, no other coach has had to deal with this. Or inheriting these problems, it isn't fair. Well, we said over and over again with Steven Silas, he didn't sign up for this. That's just a different way of putting the same situation, only this time Caserio knew exactly what he was getting into. He knew Bill O'Brien left you with an absolute crap storm that you were going to have to dig out, and it wasn't going to be easy. And that's before he knew that Deshaun Watson wanted out. So he had a ton of hurdles to overcome that aren't natural when a guy, even if he takes over a rebuilding situation. So that's why I'm not willing to pull the plug on him that quickly. But I also, as much as I say, we never are going to know how much he had in the first two coaches. We give him total credit for what he did in the draft. We don't know if he had help. Obviously, he has to rely on scouts and other guys too. But we know that we went back and forth, the negatives, the coaching searches, and the way that was mishandled, the negatives of the trades, even though they were lower draft picks and minuscule trades as opposed to frontline players, they were still trades made that you scratched your temple and went, well, why did they do that in the first place?
Sure.
But there were also a lot of good things and positives that were done. The draft a year ago, I always give more credit to it than you do.
Sure.
But we both talk about how he was able to at least somewhat try to manipulate a no-trade clause in a Deshaun Watson trade, which most guys in the same situation would have said, well, let me know who you pick, and I'll see what I can possibly work out. And you have no position of strength in the process. So he's done some good things, even this last year, bringing in a couple of veterans that could actually make an impact, as opposed to veterans just for the sake of cheap contracts experienced in the league that can kind of just pass the buck and keep going.
Yep.
But I think with all that being said, there's not enough to substantially say, this dude screwed up so badly, he's got to go. Because there's so many other things that have to change. And it starts with coaching and the quarterback, and then putting the right pieces around everybody. And if it proves in a year that he's not the right guy to be around those guys, or he swings and misses on either guy, then it's time to say, we need somebody else.
Caserio's main job, GM's main job, is team building. To make the roster a talented roster. I believe that the roster is far more talented this year than it was a year ago. You need to see the same improvements going forward, and he needs to figure out the coach. Like, we can give him a free pass on Cully, bridge coach. We can say that Cal made him hire Lovie Smith. Okay, All right, those are your free passes. Those are your get-out-of-jail-free cards. This one has to be a hit. We have to start seeing it as soon as next season. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. There's one name that's being mentioned a lot in our Twitch about the next head coach for the Texans, a former Houston Texan, DeMeco Ryans. Is he really in play? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I got on to that guy earlier for having his tinfoil hat moment that the Texans were trying to win to get out of the Bryce Young dilemma at number one. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. But I do have my own tinfoil hat conspiracy, if you're interested.
Okay.
Are you interested in this theory? Now, it has nothing to do with, like, Lovie Smith trying to intentionally win a football game, and they just flipped the switch, and all of a sudden the Texans are good and good enough to win. They had to convert 2 fourth and double-digit yards to go. First time it's happened all year. They had to convert a 4th and 20. Never want to hear 4th and 20 again in my life. And then they had to convert the 2-point conversion all to win the game against the Colts yesterday on the road. I do have this theory. I think that the Texans were so bothered by the reaction of its fan base yesterday, because everybody was livid. Everybody was mad. And part of me, quite frankly, was, Blankers, mm-hmm. I enjoyed all of the people that had told us at the beginning of the season, oh, you guys are idiots for embracing the suck, and then seeing those people rooting for the Texans to lose yesterday. I'm not going to lie. I loved seeing that. I was petty yesterday, Blankers. I was so petty seeing all the people like, oh, you guys are idiots for embrace the suck. Seeing them root for the Texans to suck. I was very petty yesterday, and I enjoyed every moment of it.
I tried to not do it on Twitter, because the night before, on a totally different subject, I was referred to as the Alex Jones of Houston sports radio, because I had a take that he didn't that this guy didn't agree with. I can't. but I thought the same thing. I'm driving around, and I'm scanning the dial, and I'm hearing all the anger, and I'm seeing it all on social media, and I'm going, all these people that were coming at us 100 miles an hour, how dare you embrace the suck? How dare you introduce this phrase? How dare you think this is a philosophy that they should be endeared to? And then be completely losing your mind, pissed off that they didn't embrace the suck and finish the deal. It was humorous. We saw guys at stations across the city, including even some on our own, that we kind of got to come around to be on our side.
Oh, yeah.
But to hear the blue Kool-Aid drinkers voicing their displeasure yesterday when a lot of those people were the ones coming at us, it was kind of enjoyable.
Everybody wanted the Texans to lose yesterday. All the ones that mocked Embrace the Suck sure loved the Embrace the Suck in Week 18. You just failed at it. You didn't get it done. But here's my theory on this. I don't think that, look, I think the Texans had already made up their mind on Lovie Smith. I don't think that yesterday's game at all influenced whether or not they fired Lovie Smith. But I do think that it impacted the timeline by a day or more. I believe that the Texans, who are very media conscious, in fact, if you go look at their Twitter yesterday, go look at the they didn't tweet at all like the fourth quarter. They tweeted when the Texans took the lead, when the Colts took the lead 28-24. They didn't tweet when the Colts made a field goal. They didn't tweet when the Texans scored the touchdown. They didn't tweet when they scored the 2-point conversion, and then all of a sudden, poof, a final score graphic. That was very, very weird, by the way. But the Texans very much care about their perception, how people view the Houston Texans. Yesterday, after the game was over, were Texans fans happy or were Texans fans livid, mad, irate? The latter. They were not pleased. They were very unhappy. I believe that the Texans already knew that they were going to fire Lovie Smith probably today. But they said, you know what? Our fan base is so mad. We know that our fan base wants to move on from Lovie Smith. We're going to go ahead and do it right now. That way we can try to curry the favor of our fan base a little bit, or at the very minimum, change the conversation a little bit, where it's not so much that they choked away the first overall pick. It's that they're headed in a new positive direction.
I think, Jeremy, one thing that we're kind of leaving out of this equation, too, is because they are so caring about perception, to be the first team out of the gate to do it, hopefully having other teams subsequently do it too,
yep.
it gets lost in the shuffle a little bit so that the finger isn't pointed directly at them, so that they're not exposed as the only team on a certain day doing what everybody said they should not do that had never done but been done before, which is get rid of two coaches in 2 years. And, oh, by the way, as we've mentioned, the fact that both coaches were African-American makes it that much more on the table to be scrutinized, and they hate that. So I think they tried to bury it as much as they could. They tried to make sure that they could deflect as much as they could, because this is something that I've said over and over again. I think this franchise worries and cares more about the perception of the fans and the media than maybe any other franchise in the NFL and maybe in professional sports other than maybe the Rockets.
Yeah, I think that the Texans moved up the timeline. Look, it might have only been 12 hours. I don't think it influenced the decision whatsoever. But I do think it influenced the timeline by half a day. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's get Anthony in here. Anthony, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on this Monday afternoon?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I enjoy the show. I just wanted to say, every time the television yesterday would focus on Lovie Smith, he always had that smirk with his arms crossed, like he knew he was getting fired. And he was trying to stick it to the Texans one more time any way he could, whether it was win the game or whatever. What do you guys think of that?
Appreciate the call, Anthony. I think you're right. I think you're 100% right. I think for the first time in NFL history, we saw an NFL head coach want to win a football game. First time we've seen it in the history of the league where an NFL head coach on the sideline said, you know what, guys? I want to have more points than the other team at the end of these 60 minutes. I think that's what we saw from Lovie Smith yesterday. Groundbreaking stuff. Groundbreaking stuff.
See, now people don't know you to read you enough to realize what a great acting job you just did. The sarcasm was oozing. If you were on Twitch, all you needed to do was put your tongue firmly in your cheek to finish the deal. But, I mean, that we've talked about this, and you obviously have said this throughout the show today. Like, look, I heard, and I did pause for a second when I heard Lovie and his son were laughing as they walked up the tunnel.
I think they got extra joy out of it, for sure.
After the fact, it's easy to say, hey, well, if we are going to get fired at the end of the day, then guess what? It is kind of sweet to know that we screwed them a little bit on the way out the door. It's the same way we talked about with the Bears, Lovie's one of Lovie's former teams. But when you're talking about a Nagy and a general manager that were basically knowing their butts were on the line, they were probably going to get fired anyway, they didn't care how much of their future they mortgaged to go get Justin Fields because they knew they wouldn't be around to have to deal with it, chances are. So guess what? On the way out, if I do get fired, hey, yeah. I screwed you a little bit more.
Look, I think he got some solace out of it. Like, I'm not willing to, like, I admit that. Like, I believe that Lovie Smith knew the writing on the wall. I think he was fighting for his job all the way through the press conference yesterday when he said he absolutely expected to be back. I think he was still trying to lobby, petition for the job. In fact, I think it was Lovie Smith that leaked that news out that we saw from NFL Network that said that Lovie had been meeting with the ownership trying to plead his case. I think that was one final Hail Mary for Lovie Smith. And I think Lovie Smith
was him
really,
or his agent, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
his camp.
That camp. So look, I agree with Anthony that Lovie Smith got some extra joy out of that, probably reading the writing on the wall, knowing he cost the Texans out of the number one overall pick. But it wasn't this, like, Lovie Smith is trying to, he's tried to do that his entire career and has actually been pretty bad at it ever since he left Chicago.
Yeah, his record at Illinois, at the Buccaneers, and with the Texans is not great by any stretch of the imagination, and it's heavily favored in the loss column. So you knew that this was a panic button, knee-jerk hire when you hired him. Again, much like Cully, but with different sets of circumstances, you were hoping that you might be able to kind of extend this out a little bit. But at the end of the year, with the quarterback prospects that are sitting there and the opportunity to kind of go in a more literally offensive direction, this is not the right coach for, and the right fit for this team for next season and beyond, and therefore a change was made. I don't like the fact that it's going to be a racial issue with a lot of people. I think it was a football issue first and foremost and an organizational issue because they mishandled so badly the first hiring. Yep. That it put more pressure on Lovie in this hiring.
I think if people dig, and not even deep, just dig a little, not even dig a little, but just look at what the Texans produced this year, how can you not justify it? Like, how can you not justify firing a coach after a 3-win season? Like, even if you don't look
less
at anything
wins
else.
Than the year previous.
Yeah, they took a step back in terms of the win total, yet had a more talented roster.
Yeah, and I think the other thing is the other guy that we're leaving out of this, more so than his first victory in the NFL, and Davis Mills didn't look great yesterday, but there's another guy that saw the writing on the wall, hears it every day. They're going to draft their franchise quarterback no matter who it is. I'm not their guy. As much as at the start of the year he was their darling and no one could say a bad word about him, for him, it's also a little sweeter, and there's not enough people looking at that, too, going, hey, Davis Mills was going to make sure on his way out, too. Nothing would have been better for him, and nothing meant more to him at getting a win in the NFL than winning the last game for the Texans and screwing them to try and find his replacement. He's part of the mix, too, in the fact that he controlled the bus to some degree. Sure. He could have tripped over his passing arm and, you know, stumbled and fallen and thrown one to the other team a couple more times.
You can't ask
he didn't
do that,
that. Yeah, and he's not going to do that because, like we said, his tape matters.
Yep.
To be a, you know, a quarterback somewhere else, or maybe if he accepts it, a backup here. But he also was had to be deeply concerned about the fact that he knew they were trying to find his replacement in the draft. Sure. And this was his way of being able to say, hey, guess what? Deal with this.
Yeah, I mean, he wanted to play well. Like, I get that he wanted to play well. I don't think that Davis Mills is in a position to be able to not accept being a backup. I don't think that he's going to have much sway or much draft value to trade, or trade value, I should say. And I want Davis Mills back on this team. He's cheap labor. He's going to be the third year of a rookie deal, and I think a capable backup in the NFL. I don't want Davis Mills to go anywhere, to be honest. 713-780-ESPN, HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. We'll get to the D'Amico Ryan stuff on the other side. Is he realistic? One person in Houston says yes. One person in Houston says no. What do we think? It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Coming up at the top of the hour, our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. If you want to get your questions in the queue, now's the time to do it. 713-780-ESPN, the HRP listener line, 713-780-3776. 4683, to be fair, anyone who didn't embrace the suck from the get-go is dumb or just a blind fan. I didn't say that. 4683.
Good point.
I'll say it again. He said, to be fair, anyone who didn't embrace the suck from the get-go is dumb or just a blind fan. So it's a text so nice, I had to read it twice. D'Amico Ryans is the popular
name. Rockets games.
What's that?
What you just said.
Man, I got bars for days.
And rhymes, yeah.
Anyways, I digress. D'Amico Ryans, Aaron Wilson, who covers the Houston Texans, says that D'Amico Ryans is not interested in the job. Meanwhile, Brian T. Smith, my favorite Brian T. Smith in the country, he says that the Houston Texans, I don't know of one, okay. He says the Houston Texans have interest in D'Amico Ryans. It takes two to tango for the Texans to hire D'Amico Ryans. D'Amico Ryans would have to be interested in the job. Broncos have received, I think they have received permission from the 49ers to interview him. They've at least asked for permission. D'Amico Ryans to Houston. Two questions. One, would you like it? Two, do you think D'Amico Ryans entertains the Houston Texans?
I think a couple of things. I think as much as we sometimes want to brush it to the side, there's two sides to every story with what happened with the lawsuit that he had with NRG Stadium and then how it also translated to being indirectly related to the Texans. Texans maybe were willing to move on from that and looking to get the best football coach they could get. D'Amico maybe not so much. Maybe he holds grudges or he didn't feel the same way and wasn't as quickly willing to sweep it under the rug. And I don't know if it's resolved or not. I think it is. But to me, for everybody that said it, it's irrelevant. I think it could have been a factor. I think the other thing from a Texans perspective is if you're truly going the direction that we keep talking about with a franchise-type quarterback drafting them out of college this year, then it is hyper-important to get an offensive-minded head coach and offensive coordinator. Because you are developing your franchise. You are developing the guy that you are putting on his shoulders the responsibility of being the man for several years for this franchise and succeeding. You can't do that with a defensive-minded coach, I don't think, as easily as when you have two really strong offensive minds in a room dictating the offense and doing the things that we've seen be successful in this league. So I think those are the first two points I would go to as to why D'Amico Ryans right now isn't the right guy for the job. Now, that could change down the road, but if it doesn't change for D'Amico and he is going to have a bad taste in his mouth about his experiences in Houston and with the Texans, then there's something that you have to accept, that you might just never get this guy and you need to move on.
I need to turn on my microphone. I don't think D'Amico Ryans is going to want this job. I don't think he wants to be back in Houston. I believe Aaron Wilson's report. Like, there was some, suggestion, some conjure, whether or not D'Amico Ryans would be interested in this job to begin with. Even before, the news cycle came out yesterday, the firing, Aaron Wilson's report, that D'Amico would not be interested. I don't think that D'Amico Ryans wants the Houston Texans job. I think there's going to be better jobs out there for him. I think he's one of the top targets in this carousel. I think he wants to avoid the Houston Texans. Do you want to throw the lawsuit element into things? I don't know how much value that still holds right now, but once upon a time, he sued NRG, sued the Houston Texans for their lack of sod, their poor sod. Actually, it wasn't even sod. It was turf. Sue the Texans over that. So is that a variable? Does that come into play? I don't know. But I'm trusting Aaron Wilson's report that D'Amico Ryans does not want to be the head coach of the Texans, and it's a job that he will not pursue. As far as wanting D'Amico Ryans, I'm kind of leaning no, to be honest with you. I want an offensive dude, especially if you're committed to going quarterback in the first round. If you want to say it's number two, if you want to say whatever, however you acquire a quarterback in the first round, you need an offensive-minded guy as the head coach. That way he sticks around to groom the quarterback, develop the quarterback, build the quarterback, have the same system for a quarterback. And I'm not even a dude that believes in one system for every quarterback and continuity, that whole thing, but I prefer it. So if you're committed to the quarterback position in the first round, you have to go get that offensive minded coach. My favorite is Ben Johnson. I don't think D'Amico is going to be interested. I prefer not D'Amico. There is one caveat, I would say, where D'Amico Ryans would interest me as the head coach of the Houston Texans. And his name is Gary Kubiak. If Gary Kubiak says, you know what, I love my former player D'Amico Ryans, I have a bug of calling plays again in the NFL, and he commits to D'Amico Ryans, because look, Gary Kubiak's not getting another head coaching job. If Kubiak is here as the offensive coordinator, I believe he's here as the offensive coordinator either until he retires or D'Amico Ryans is no longer the head coach of the Texans. So if you're telling me you can get D'Amico, I would say that I need Gary Kubiak, but I get that package. You have my attention. I'd be more than happy with D'Amico Ryans and a Gary Kubiak duo.
It could be done, right? I think that there are enough guys. And look, being under the Shanahan tree, I would trust that D'Amico has made enough contacts and built enough relationships and knows enough guys to where he could find a guy that would be a good fit for a young quarterback coming into this league to take the reins and work with him to develop him. But I think that, it's just too enticing of a deal to take a guy that could work with two really good offensive minds that have a longstanding relationship that could come in and say, hey, look, we can get you where you need to go quickly if you just listen and trust us along the way. I have no doubt D'Amico Ryans can succeed. I think he sees what Robert Saleh did with the Jets, and he followed in his footsteps and believes that, hey, if I get a franchise that isn't in disarray, that I get an ownership that allows me to have a say, and we can do things the right way, and they have a better roster than the Texans, there's no reason to believe that in a year or two I can't have a playoff-caliber team that I can get some credit for, that I can make this my home long term. I think there's just too many question marks of uncertainty that are going around and swirling around the Texans right now before they get a quarterback, before they do the right things, that this is going to be where this is going to be a destination. We've seen this in the past.
They could easily get a quarterback at two.
They could, right? No, but what I'm saying is, if we knew before, Matt Eberflus, I think, was one of the guys, but there were guys that just decided, I don't want to go there. That's not my cup of tea.
Sure.
I don't like the vibe. I think we're not through that. We're not done with that yet. I think there are going to be coaches, because a lot of times they're judged on what they did when they became a head coach, whether it was their first or their second go-round, they're a retread or they're a first-timer, and they don't want to fail miserably, whether they're a good coach or not, because of the roster and the other variables in their first go-round. And D'Amico might be that guy that says, no, I'm looking for the perfect opportunity. I've got a great gig now. I got a defense I get a ton of credit for with a ton of talent on it. And until I get the absolute right job that I believe is right for me, I'm not going to make that sacrifice and take a job that I don't really feel comfortable with.
I think D'Amico's getting a job this year.
I think you're probably right.
I think he's getting the Denver job. quite honestly.
I think
he's headed to Denver.
I don't, for the similar reasons but different circumstances. I believe they need an offensive-minded coach that can work. That's why they're so interested in a Peyton, because Sean Payton, even if they don't have the capital really to give up, I don't think that the Saints want, but they want an offensive-minded coach that's worked with a shorter quarterback in the that's older like a Drew Brees in the past. And I think they're looking for someone that unequivocally can give it their best shot to turn Russell Wilson around.
I could see that. I don't know if Peyton's going to be the guy there, though. I just have a feeling that D'Amico Ryans ends up there. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776.
What about D'Amico in Carolina?
I could see that.
I could see that.
I wouldn't be shocked if they keep Wilkes. Wilkes did a really good job there.
He really did turn them around. It's just that he's not getting enough credit for the fact that that team was firmly headed for the absolute basement mm-hmm. of this league, and they took a late run at trying to win the division and getting a playoff spot.
They can interview him this week, too, since he's currently with the team. So he's going to get the first crack at it. I'm rooting for him to get that job, quite honestly. 8411, Nick Caserio will never be happy until he hires a New England guy. As far as Lovie Smith, he was fired after Game 4. Probably true about Lovie. Let me tell you some facts about Nick Caserio and this whole idea that he wants a New England guy. 8411. Nick Caserio's best friend is Josh McDaniels, who, we know he's the head coach with the Las Vegas Raiders. You know how many times that McDaniels interviewed for the Houston Texans head coaching job?
No.
None. Mm. Zero. Mm. Nick Caserio has never even interviewed a Patriots assistant to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. And Nick Caserio's done it twice. Nick Caserio's had two different coaching carousels to at least entertain the idea of bringing in a Patriots assistant. Josh McDaniels was on that shortlist. Gerard Mayo, somebody who came up quite a bit last year. There's other ones that are out there as well that are Patriots assistants that we thought would at least get an interview for the Houston Texans position. Nick Caserio, in two different coaching carousels, two different openings for the Houston Texans head coaching job, never interviewed a Patriots assistant. And you're going to say, well, Brian Flores. Well, Brian Flores was gone. By that time, Brian Flores was not a former Patriot assistant or a Patriot assistant. He was the former Miami Dolphins head coach. He didn't interview McDaniels. He didn't interview Mayo. He didn't interview a single Patriots assistant. I don't believe Nick Caserio wants the Patriot way to follow him along to Houston. And I think that we've seen fact. We've seen action to that, not just words. Zero Patriots have been interviewed to be the head coach of the Houston Texans the last 2 years.
Yeah, no, I think, look, at a certain point, too, there's certain things that follow you around. Like when the Patriots looked like the never-ending dynasty, when it looked like it was the right thing to do, to hitch your wagon to that and then reap all the benefits. In the last couple of years, and with the separation of church and state in the case of Brady and Belichick, you realize that the luster's worn off. And the Belichick coaching tree, the same kind of thing. Not a lot more failures than successes. The Belichick quarterback tree, a lot more failures than successes. So you look at it and you say, at a certain point, I want to prove who I am and what I can do aside from the Patriots way reputation, and I need to step away. I also think that based on the tampering that happened the first go-around trying to get a guy like Caserio, that it also kind of hindered the way that they do business and the fact that this is the last thing we want to do is keep poaching from the Patriots. Mm-hmm. And I don't think the organization really likes that whole Patriots South moniker either.
For whatever reason, Caserio has not interviewed a Patriots assistant. Brian Flores, former Patriots assistant.
Seems like
he was
a blessing.
Ex-Miami. I don't know what the deal was. Last year, I had a theory that he had a handshake deal with Belichick. Hey, Belichick, you let me leave. I won't interview any of your guys. That was my theory.
Look, Daryl Morey did this forever and a day with his coaching staff in Houston, too, and his assistant coaches. I could firmly see that this being part of the under-the-table or non-publicized details of any kind of an agreement that was worked out between the Patriots and the Texans when they avoided the fine.
Look, I think McDaniel sucks as a head coach, but he's best friends with Nick Caserio. He was coveted by other NFL teams, and McDaniels wanted to leave New England, yet he didn't interview for the Texans job. That's weird.
McDaniels, that's flat Patricia, out weird. There's a lot of guys weird. That haven't done well, though.
Yeah, weird. Like, why didn't he interview those guys? You tell me. 713-780-ESPN. It's our Mailbag Monday. You can ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Texans questions, what we did this weekend, what it's like to work with BMAC instead of Brendan Riley. 713-780-ESPN. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Our Mailbag Monday on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Turn your tax refund into a new kitchen with Menards. Cabinets. Make this the year you check that project off the list. Renovate your space with new cabinets from Cardell. They're ready to install and come in a variety of styles and finishes with free shipping to your home. Visit our kitchen showrooms in-store or go to Menards.com for free estimates today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer for all of our hot deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hi there, we are James and Dan, two thoughts of the hit UK podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Each week we get around the microphones with our four favorite facts that we've learned over the last 7 days and sit down to blow each other's mind.
Yeah, here's a fact for you, Dan.
Yep.
In knot theory, a circle of rope without a knot is technically a knot, but it's called a knot knot.
Very good. I go on here as well. In 2019, a marathon runner with the words Jesus Saves written on his bib had a heart attack, but was revived by a man called Jesus.
That's amazing. If you want to hear more facts like that, search for No Such Thing as a Fish wherever you get your podcasts.